This is a digital recording of the Academic Senate meeting of September 3rd, 2015.
So that will be Monday, the 14th of September, Monday following the week following Labor Day. The president, was at the President's Diversity Council, that's chaired by Dean Carlos Ayala and myself, yesterday, and we were addressing the Hispanic Serving Institution initiative and got an update on where we are and the odds of us making it this go round, but setting us up, ourselves up for regularly being able to be eligible. And so we're right on the brink of eligibility, and maybe this year is the year that we can do it, actually get it. If not, it's looking very hopeful for next year. We also dealt with some EOP housing issues. It turns out that some of the EOP students are on wait lists for housing, and because of their circumstances, it makes them in particularly difficult spots to be in. So we're going to try and help out with that. And we also are going to be working with the Senate Diversity Subcommittee on a Dream Center resolution. You heard that come up at the end of last year, and that was something that really energized both committees, and so we're going to be coming forward with that. You may see a resolution and plans soon. Okay, so I believe that's all the items in my report. Are there any questions for me? I guess I should say it formally. Congratulations, Ruben, on making it to the home stretch, and it'll be an interesting last year. So, okay. So, next, let's turn to the agenda. And I would like to ask to add an item to the agenda. So this requires a motion and a second and then an approval. You'll see a memo in front of you regarding the need for a Senate resolution on academic integration and appropriate university support for the Green Music Center and its programs, series, events, and facilities. I was pretending to write some dissertation title or something the other day, but this is the item that I'd like to have, and maybe we can go into it with me as a whole when we have it there. So, do I see a motion to add this to the agenda? I see a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? Okay. Are there any objections to adding it? Okay. So we'll be adding that, and I think it's appropriate to put it between business item 2 and 3 because the group photo is pretty much the end of the game today. Okay. Moving on. Well, I guess there is. I'll leave that for you for a business item. So, we have some minutes to approve. They were circulated, and I didn't know if anybody had any corrections, additions, requests to strike something out of those. So, unless I hear objections, we will adopt those as circulated. So now we have consent items, as we do every year. We have a list of our colleagues who are getting out of line, and you'll see them attached to your agenda packet here. And unless we hear any objections, can we move this forward with consent? Are there any omissions? Every so often we get an omission because communications didn't happen. Okay. So we have adopted the that list to go forward. Okay. We have as an information item, the year-end reports for the Senate and the Student Affairs Committee have circulated by email. If you haven't seen them and can't find them, let us know to do that. Any of the other committees that wish to do so, feel free to get end of year reports to us, and we can do that. However, if you have something particularly complex or interesting to bring forward, we'd also entertain them as presentations. Okay, are you ready to go to the Robert's Rules? Yeah. Since we sometimes might need Robert's Rules in order to properly deal with the reports as they come forward, before we go into any of the other reports, we will give you our Senate 101 crash course in Robert's Rules, as put together by Laurel Holmstrom. right? We'll have no problems in process. Although we have one problem in process right now. You see that we have this sign that says parliamentarian, and we ain't got one. So is there anybody here who feels comfortable enough with Robert's Rules of Order and is willing to serve as parliamentarian this year? Don't all jump at once. Okay, well, we'll muddle through today without one, but we would strongly urge one of you to consider doing so. Oh, another Robert's Rule of Order. Turn off your phones. Okay. All right, sorry about that. Sam,
if you're willing to do it, I'll leave if I can sit here.
You can sit there. It's the best offer I've got. Yeah, because usually we won't need to be. It's just that if we get into a problem, we might ask, what are we supposed to be doing here? And the parliamentarian can help clarify when the chair is running off the rails. Okay. With that done, let us turn to some reports, and then we will do an orientation to faculty governance. So again, if you're wanting to speak, raise your hand. Both Tom and Carmen are going to try and help keep the speakers list going, and we'll do our best. So, President Armignano, do you have anything to report?
As is my tradition, I do not have a report.
Okay, are there any questions for the President? All right, seeing none, we move to the Provost. Provost Rogerson, anything to report?
Oh, just what you're reading in the newspapers is true. We have a record enrollment at Sonoma State, but it's not massively higher. It's about 100 students compared to last fall. As of today, we have about 9,446 students, and they're taking an average unit load of about 13.7, which is very healthy. This gets us to about 106% of our target, which again is a nice place to be for the fall, which is heavier than the spring. You know, the other interesting snippet is that 10% of our students are part-time, which means we are 90% full-time students. Things are looking good. Vice President Slareth wondered if people needed it, I could say some comments about the $800,000 shortfall, but perhaps we'll leave that till later, or if you need it, because your memo seems to address it. But
Since this has gotten onto the agenda, maybe that can come up during part of that.
Anyone needs to have any comments, I'm pleased.
Okay. So, any questions for the Provost? Assuming there's nothing else he has to give us. Oh, okay. Now we turn to the Vice Chair of the Senate, who typically is reporting from Structure and Functions. Do you have anything to report?
The Structure and the Functions has not yet met this semester, so I don't have anything from their report. But as you may or may not be aware of, we have a referendum pending, and we still need about like a handful of votes, like 24 votes or something.
No, even less than that. Single digit
votes. So
if you're an avid, you could bring us over the line.
And extend it till tomorrow.
So, very close. That's. You may have seen my plea that went out this morning. Okay, any questions for Structure and Functions of the Vice Chair?
So is it an option for people to turn in their ballots but have it not be an abstention?
How would we do that? In effect, it's a no vote because it doesn't count towards the positive, and therefore it would get us towards quorum. On the other hand, it's more useful to us if it fails and we're trying to figure out what to do, if it was a no because somebody feels it's not good, it's less information.
Just like some people who aren't voting because they're just not sure enough about the issues, but if they could turn in their ballot without a yes or no, we could still make it 50%, and we might have made it earlier if you let them know that that's an option.
Yeah.
Is it enough?
Well, there's only 2 points on it, but if the ballot were entered and it had neither on it, I guess we wouldn't be able to tally it one way or the other, but it still would be a ballot that was received.
Yeah.
Senator, what?
I was asked by someone whether there was any language in our bylaws, et cetera, on how often a, or how frequently, how long a election can be extended.
There isn't, and we have on multiple occasions in the past, when we failed to reach quorum, had one or two extensions. We even had, at one point in my memory, since being here, a time when we basically said we're leaving it open until the quorum is met, because it was needed. It was just something that had to have some kind of resolution in any other. However, if people wanted that in the bylaws, that is something that could be added. Rule of. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. So then let's move to the Vice President of Administration and Finance is not here, so Neil Martin is here in CFO for Congress's place. Do you have anything to report from there?
No, nothing.
Okay. Any questions for Neil to bring back? Senator Music.
Yes, and I'm actually not sure who directed this question to, but I know that the call for nominees for faculty representation on the president's search have gone out, and I was wondering if and when there would be a call for the staff selection for staff on the presidential search committee.
Yeah. My understanding, having read the notes that came from the Chancellor's office and looking at policy, is that a staff representative selected by the staff is also one of the members. And so we've sometimes run elections for staff, for instance, to get the staff representative here. So if we can be of any assistance in that process, we're absolutely happy to do that.
Okay. We'll double check and see if there's a process.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. So, any other questions for our CFO? Senator Rock.
Just a comment. Someone brought up to me in EPC today that, and I feel operative reader because I did not read the memo from Larry very clearly about the GMC funding issue that came out earlier this week, because I had heard him give his report in XCOM. But apparently in that email you referred to the GMC as a department of the university, and that created some question marks for some EDC members as to clarify if you really mean that the GMC is a department. And what just what means that?
Say the GMC is a department of the university.
It actually says, like all departments at SSU, the center enjoys the synergies. So it's not, I mean, I guess you could be right. I don't think it means that it's really a formal department. It's
right.
Like all operations, like all departments.
Right. We have a police department. So we have academic departments and other departments. So I think it was in that sense. That's how I read it. Worth watching. Okay. All right. Any other questions or comments? Okay. Thank you. Why don't we move to Vice President of Student Affairs, Matthew Lopez-Hills.
Welcome back, everyone. Good to see you. I have a couple quick announcements. One, I'm pleased to announce that we held a search for the permanent director of our CAPS, our Psychological Services Department, and Dr. Laura Williams was the successful candidate, and she just accepted today. And so she will be serving us in that role. And she's also continuing with the victim's advocacy role. However, we are searching for a full-time advocate as well. We've also added another counselor to that group, Dr. Avila. She was one of our interns last year, a postdoc, and she joined us this fall as well. On October 23rd through the 25th is Parent and Family Weekend. Last year we brought this event back. We had about 150 participants. Our website has been up for 2 weeks and we have over 400 people already signed up. So expect that weekend to be exciting and lots of people on campus enjoying lots of things that you all do. I know that Dr. Works has we were talking about possibly doing something in the chemistry or chemistry labs, safe engine chemistry labs, right? So if any of you have something that you would like to really talk to the parents or show off in your departments, I'd be happy to put that on a list of things that they could go enjoy. They're already wanting to go hike out our preserves and see some of the work that's being done up there, which is a wonderful program. And other than that, they're back. And we are busy already. I don't know if you feel it, but this semester seems like it's not just a gentle trot into the semester. I feel a full-out sprint has been necessary thus far.
Okay, any questions for our Vice President of Student Affairs?
Okay,
we move on to our Vice President of Associated Students. So, Kate Chavez.
Hello, everyone. So, I'm Kate Chavez. I'm the Executive Vice President for 2015-2016 school year. I just want to say that we're very happy to be here on behalf of the Student Voice, and we would really like to focus on faculty-student relations this year. So, if you have anything that needs student input or student opinion, we would be more than willing to either help out.
Okay. Any questions for our representatives from Associated Students? Okay, going quickly today. From our statewide senators. I think they're in session this week, so we won't be seeing them here. That will happen occasionally. Okay, so before we go to the reports from the chairs of the standing subcommittees, it seems like a good segue point to looking at the introduction and the orientation to faculty governance and how the various committees fit in. So let's turn to that. All right, so one thing that we thought was important was, as we think this year about the committees themselves, it would be good to see not just the ones that come to the Senate here, but get down into the subcommittees and other structures. So, forest, seeing the forest instead of the trees. So if we think about the purpose of faculty governance, it's one part of the governance structure at Sonoma State. And we have student governance and we have administration in here. We're supposed to be connecting across all those areas, advising those that are in the positions of decision-making power. Faculty government makes decisions and recommendations. And we actually own the curriculum. So that's where we're actually one of our primary roles, and we control the curriculum, not the administration. However, we know that always ends up dealing with resources to deliver the curriculum. And so we still have to be working together. But we make the recommendation on the curriculum, reappointment, tenure, promotion, and academic policies, and those kinds of things. So participating in faculty governance means participating in university decision making. And that's what I was appealing to this morning when I was feeling like we weren't getting folks in. Voting as faculty is part of that. So the structure of faculty governance, we have our academic senate here, and we have two kinds of categories of the committees. We have the subcommittees of the senate, and they report to the Senate itself. And then we have standing committees that have their own structure, sometimes multiple subcommittees under them. So we have the executive committee that meets in the alternate weeks, and that consists of the chairs of the standing committees, the officers of the Senate, the secretary, the vice chair, the president, and we have members of the administration also there, as well as a representative from student governance. We also have reporting to the executive committee, a subcommittee of the executive committee, is structure and functions, and they're the folks that have been running our elections. They look to appointments that come from the faculty Sometimes we make the appointments, sometimes we make the nominations to the administration. So structure and functions also will look to see, are things functioning effectively in the Senate as a whole? Is the Senate as an organization functioning properly? And so that's why you saw the work last year on the structure of the Senate, coming out of structure and functions and work with them. Even though we were bringing in folks from other places, FSAC and other places, that's why I resided there. We also have reporting to the Senate, the Senate Budget Subcommittee. And this is a group that's meant to get together and work on data and positions that might be helpful for us as the Senate when we're trying to advise the administration, especially around issues in budgets. So you'll see that I might be invoking them in our next business item. We also have the Senate Diversity Subcommittee, and they're working hand-in-hand with the President's Diversity Council, where they may actually be working on their charter a little bit this year, but they do work on especially how issues of diversity play in curriculum and co-curricular, where we might need some connections made between what would otherwise be separate, maybe an EPC, but also student affairs, you can see other things across. So they're meant to champion that role. We also see the standing committees and subcommittees. Academic planning is the one that's on hiatus. You didn't see it at all last year. And that hiatus status was actually what triggered that working group to try and figure out what we do with the Senate. We also have an Educational Policies Committee, EPC, and they have under them, so the GE subcommittee, the graduate studies, which tends to be the coordinators of the programs there, so that's the most ex officio type of group. But we have folks elected to our GE committees for the schools. We have the program review committee. This group will become more visible as we go to WASC, right? Because we're going to be needing to provide assessments of our programs and directions on where we're going. And so that's starting to heat up. And we also have the University Standards Committee. Sean knows this one as well. This is where the standards, the procedures are enforced. Students that might be asking for waivers, if there's other kinds of issues of are things functioning properly, it'll often go to the University Standards Committee. Grade appeals, that sort of thing. They're not going to, that's a separate group. But if people are feeling like we haven't been in process, things like that, if you go to the university standards, but especially a lot of the waivers. Okay. Faculty Standards and Affairs Committee. This includes one of our most hallowed committees, the University RTP Committee. And Faculty Standards and Affairs is also where we'll see the RTP policies handled, usually working in conjunction with the University Retention, Tenure, and Promotion Committee. We also have the Professional Development Subcommittee. So this is where a lot of our professional development work goes. We often work with this committee when we're trying to set up our retreats in January. The orientations for new faculty are in here. A lot of the activities that happen in the faculty center, especially as we're trying to improve pedagogy, bring in new techniques. A lot of that comes through there. So then we have the Academic Freedom Committee, and this is one of those committees that surfaces sometimes as things get hot and then sometimes it's quiet for a while. But the reason it's under the Faculty Standards and Affairs Committee is the academic freedom issues are often closely tied to what we as faculty have as rights and obligations. And then we have sponsored programs. And so that group handles grants, contracts, and those kinds of issues. So again, fairly busy on the faculty side, doing research, human subject review, and things like that are overseen by those folks. And then we have the Student Affairs Committee. That one is really where we focus on issues that are relevant for the students and how how, in fact, is often what will happen with students' rights. For instance, things like attendance policies and whatnot may involve getting input from the student affairs committee because we're wrestling with the kinds of issues that students might be trying to juggle. Are they part of teams that are traveling? And what does that do for attendance and participation? So you can see how issues like that come in. So the dispute resolution board is in there. So that's often, student disputes may be coming in through there, so that's why it's under student affairs. We also have the scholarship subcommittee, and we have the academic advising subcommittee there. So those all report to the student affairs committee. So that's the structure, but who are the faces? So this year, I'm your chair. Carmen is your vice chair. Tom Target is our secretary. And then the chairs of the standing committee, we've got Doug. Where are you, Doug? There he is, standing in the back. We have Charles Ulster, he was there at PDC yesterday. I don't see him here today. He occasionally shows up for reports. The Senate Budget Subcommittee, we don't have a chair because our chair is out on parental leave, I believe. And so we're going to be meeting on Tuesday and figuring out whose place goes there. Suddenly Carmen's where I know we'll be. Okay, we also have EDC. Laura Watt is our chair of EDC. And under there, we see Heather Smith for the GE committee, subcommittee. We see Adam Zimmelbaum. He's in counseling, and he'll be in the graduate studies subcommittee. Michelle Jolly for the university standards. And Diana Grant is there for the program review subcommittee. So if you see these faces around, part of what we're also hoping is by seeing which faces go with some of these names, as you walk across campus, you might go, oh yeah, I meant to ask you about X or whatever. This works in my classes, I hope it works here. All right, faculty standards and affairs committee, with the allocation of Richard Wittges, we have Ed Bebo stepping up to the plate. And serving there on the academic freedom, we have Stephen Farmer, that's right. And Greta Bulmer is there for the URTP, and which the schools are pretty busy in the fall. You'll see the URTP committee folks getting slammed in the spring after it moves out of your schools. These folks did there. We see it's sponsored programs. It's Tom Ashton, that's who it is. Okay, and then we see Melissa Garvin is on the Professional Development Subcommittee. And Student Affairs Committee, Ron Lopez is standing forward for that. And we have under there Mike Visser, who's there for the Dispute Resolution Board. And it's interesting, this group, because they have to remain very discreet as issues are going on. They can't talk about things that are pending, but they are quite busy at times. It's good to know that they're there and probably do a good job. And then we have Doug Jordan on the scholarship committee. We don't have identified a chair for the academic advising subcommittee. So if you could help us encourage somebody to step forward as that, please do. So you saw the Roberts Rules, how things move around here. One of the things that's the biggest challenges that we have is getting things to move around through the set of structures, because it depends on whose domain it lands in, and then sometimes who else's domain it sometimes tangles up in. And so these things we'll make sure that are available to you up on the Senate website as well. But if if a proposal comes forward, it can start in various different places. A committee could start a proposal because they think something needs to be done, in which case that committee may work on it and then bring it to XCOM. XCOM itself might be saying, it looks like the Senate needs to respond to something, and so it will discuss which of the committees it thinks need to deal with it, and then maybe send it down to those committees, and it may come back. We can also have items come to the Senate itself without going through the executive committee. And the theory behind that is that the executive committee shouldn't necessarily be a wall between the faculty and its governing body. However, one of the main functions of the executive committee is to make sure that something is ready to be handled here. There's enough documentation, that the arguments are clear, are the data consistent, and that sort of thing. Oh, yeah, sorry. Okay, sorry. Yeah, it's all animated. So you will see things move up and down through the committees, sometimes starting here, sometimes it'll be raised here as a report, relegated down. Sometimes it'll go back and forth under some of the levels. So typically subcommittee work will go through the standing committees and then come to the executive committee. Some of these subcommittees also you'll see on the agendas as being expected to report once in a while. And so that also may be how things come to us, and it's not necessarily proposed. Okay. I think
this is okay.
Yeah. So when items do come to the executive committee, one of the things that we do is after vetting it to see if it's ready, we will then maybe put it on a particular agenda, sometimes timing it with things. And we will set up a basic order, but sometimes things will change along the way, and that's why we then revisit the agenda as we're working on, you know, at the beginning of these sessions. Yeah. And so you'll notice even in this agenda, some items come as a consent item. So the way consent items work is it is there and no one wishes to discuss it and there are no objections, then the proposal passes. If someone has a question about it, they can pull an item from the consent calendar. And the consent calendar might have four or five items in it. Somebody might say, I would like to pull item three, the approval for a particular curriculum, and may ask questions and it may turn into a business item. Sometimes it's just, what is that? I'm trying to find out what it is, so pulling it won't necessarily stop it entirely. But unless somebody pulls it from the consent calendar, it moves forward. So we also have information items. So those aren't necessarily anything we would take action on, make any kind of decision. And so you see that we had information items, end of year reports, for instance. We also will then have regular business items. Typically, regular business items involve discussion and often a decision. A proposal that's coming forward, typically in our Senate, and this is not regular Robert's Rules of Order, it will get a first reading and a second reading. The purpose of a first and second reading is so that the documents and the issue come forward and people are familiarizing themselves with it. The point is not to make the decision at that stage, and it's also not to argue for or against the proposal. It's meant for everybody to understand it. And then once they've understood it and had a chance to form some questions, then it will come back at a later meeting, typically, have a second reading, and that's when we open it up for discussion, amendments, changes. Frequently, on the first reading, we will see people asking questions because they don't understand things, and that may cause the folks bringing the proposal to revise it when it comes forward. So we sometimes see good changes that come through. So we focus on that on the first reading. Sometimes there'll be enough changes that we'll actually substitute one proposal with a new one and start from a reworked piece because enough was added to it. That's a good sign. That means that we're getting our work done elsewhere and are moving things forward. And so then, so that's those. Okay. So now we're going to have a Jeopardy game to help us play around with the ideas of what do we do.
How many teams do we want?
So, should we make teams? Do we have like one team over here, one team on the back, and one team on the side? Getting three teams? All right. And so, here we go.
Who's going to start?
All right, so, like Jeopardy, you know what it is? I already did that. Jeopardy is my
favorite. Oh, wait, you don't see?
All right, so
this yet? Why are you seeing that?
find a wonderful shirt set up.
What is it?
What is it?
You're not supposed to do that.
wants Jeopardy. All right, so you guys did at that point, right? And then you continue. Okay, so just. So who, now you guys.
Oh,
now let's let
it
go.
I get it.
You guys. XCOM. What is XCOM?
Wait.
Oh,
sorry.
Well, that's close. That's close. This is my first Friday.
presidential reception for schools.
No.
Oh, what is the invitation?
What is it the, I don't know what it's called, the professional development opportunity that they do like in January?
Nope.
Yeah.
What are the
What is the faculty retreat?
Nope.
What is faculty government?
What?
Interesting.
That's from my survey. He got me.
Not good.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
All right. So now the ghost. Nobody got it. Yeah.
Well, that's the last question. So.
I think that was team two.
Yes, it was.
So team two, what would you like? You guys can choose for the committee, the 300 things committee.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they might
really. Oh,
what is the result?
Do you get it? Do
you get it? By former Jim Grant, aspiring faculty to guide.
What is sponsored program?
That's why it's called FSSP, Faculty Subcommittee on Sponsored Program. It's some tradition. I don't know why they do that. So that's team one. Point two, they didn't say faculty subcommittee on sponsored program. Wait, I got the D. Yes. So you got Jeopardy, right? Are you guys choosing this?
Yes.
Okay.
And then we'll help you.
Yeah. We'll take a minute to find it. Now we see elections, bylaws, and conflict. What is structural function? Okay, we'll take leadership for 200, please, Laura.
Oh, easy.
Okay. We'll take leadership for 300.
Who am I?
Who's not
you guys didn't Committees for Sponsored Programs.
What is the graduate subcommittee?
Okay, now two.
Committees for attendees for 300, please. What is the GE subcommittee?
Signatures and also mentioned that the entire entire CSU is looking at an online process for RTP. Speaking of which, that is going to be our big item at the FSAT this year, is the RTP policy revision. As some of you may recall, last year, on our Moodle site, a question was posted to give us feedback, and we're happy to say we got quite a bit of feedback, including, thankfully, from many former and current RTP chairs. So over the summer, we had a task force led by a very capable FSAT member, Paula Hammett, who helped identify what the key issues that people were concerned about with RTP policy. And of course, those key issues largely revolve around how to simplify the process and clarify the process. Paula plans to have a draft before FSAT, hopefully no later than October 1st. Our goal is to then work on it in committee and get it to XCOM by the end of the semester so that the Senate can play with it in the spring.
Wow. Okay. Thank you. Any questions for FSAT? Okay, seeing none. Student Affairs, we don't have a representative here, although I do know that XCOM had sent its way. There's an issue with attendance policy language in a 1986 policy that is described as under review since back then, and that it is inconsistent with some catalog copy regarding attendance policies. And so we do know that this came up as a discussion in Senate in the past couple of years, and so we're asking SAC to look at that, and they will be addressing that. Was there anything else that appeared in that meeting that you were?
No.
So that was their primary business then. And that was brought to our attention by a faculty member who was seeing the discrepancy and wondering what to do. Okay. Are there any questions that we can send out to the Student Affairs Committee? We turn to the CFA, and Elaine Newman is on sabbatical, and so during that time, Carmen Works will be stepping into various places. Are you doing that today?
Yeah, I have a brief report today. As you know, we're in year two of our three-year contract, and we are in a reopener on faculty salaries, and we are asking for a 5% GSI for all faculty and then a 2.65% SSI, which is a salary step increase for faculty that are eligible that have not yet reached their salary step maximum. So you will be seeing an email, and there are handouts, and we're asking members and non-members to everyone if you want us to fight for the 5, if you're willing to make a commitment or settle for the 2. So it's important that you get those to respond in your email or fill out a commit card.
Okay. Any questions for our CFA chapter? Okay, seeing none, we come to the last of our regular reports. Staff Representative Music, anything to report?
Yes, thank you. So I'm excited to start my second year as staff representative, and I'm looking forward to working with all of you in the 2015-2016 academic year. And for those of you who are new to the Senate, I just want to take a moment to mention some of the unusual bugs or features, depending on how you look at it, of the staff representative position compared to the other positions that have standing reports for the Senate. So the staff representative does not report from the committee or even a small constituency. Instead, I report from the staff at large. From the CSU Employees Union, units 2, 5, 7, and 9, the trades, the police, and the security. And even though we're a relatively small campus, it's a large and diverse population to report from. So I would like to once again ask the members of the Senate to assist me in my efforts to increase connectivity amongst the staff on campus by keeping an ear out for things staff may want brought forward to the Senate and suggesting that they contact me as their staff representative. And on that note, I do have a couple things to report today. First, I'd like to mention that there has been an uptick in the reports of missing and moved furniture in the classrooms. And I can tell you as a former AC, that missing and moved furniture generates a big workload for the staff, both in the department, the school, and of course in facilities. Especially now, which is the busy time of the year.
So just as a favor to the staff and class afterwards, I just, on behalf of the staff, would like to ask to just, if you move the classroom around during your class, just please make sure to return all the furniture to its original location and set up before you leave. And second, just a quick thank you regarding parking. For those of you who don't know, over the summer was announced that the pilot program that allows holders of the general parking pass to park in the housing lots. It was announced that it was ended, and without going into too much detail, because it was quite a discussion, it brought up a lot of conversation, but as a result, basically the pilot's been extended another 6 months to a year, and I just want to use this opportunity to thank Nate Johnson on behalf of staff for extending that pilot program where the campus evaluates the parking and transportation situation. And that's about it. And any questions you would like for me to take that to staff?
So, Senator Mandavi?
I have a question. I don't actually know if it's for you, but who has decided how each classroom should be arranged?
Isn't there a Senate committee or isn't there a committee that actually talks about that?
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I find it interesting. I have a classroom, and it says that there should be 32 chairs and X number of tables, and it should be in rows. And I am a special ed teacher, and we don't teach in rows.
Yeah. That's a good question.
So nobody asked me right. How my teaching space should be.
Yeah, I remember when I was being taught about pedagogy, they said, if you don't control the furniture in your classroom, the janitor does. That's a useful question. I think it's worth us exploring and seeing where would be the place to do it. I know that a long time back, we used to have a regularly meeting committee on classrooms and how they're supposed to be set up, but that's been in a strange limbo state. The closest thing we've had has been the renovation ad hoc group that came out of APC being on hiatus. But I will follow up on that. That's a good one. Senator Watt?
Just a comment on that. I think Schedule 25 has been implemented and departments no longer quote-unquote own.
Yeah.
It really isn't clear what you expected set up is, because certainly in Carson 14, we have the desk set up in a U-shape for all eternity, and now people can come in and it's not.
Okay, that's, thank you. Senator Rowe?
Yeah, just a comment. There are some classrooms that we use, primarily use for language teaching, and we requested already years ago to get movable furniture precisely so that we could play around with that and change the configuration, and that's what we do. I mean, that's the practice in a number of classrooms. So not everything is
still good.
At least
the
okay.
Vice Chair Works.
I find it interesting too that there was a man that somebody said that it had to be in rows because I've never seen that as a policy in any classroom that the chairs have to be
it's
in certain
across the door in
rows. I've seen a number of chairs so that if someone takes one to another classroom they bring it back. But that's an interesting one.
I have seen those maps.
Okay.
Okay, well, we'll follow up on that. Senator Thompson.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say, I think something that I think Katie and I both probably are referring to when we're thinking about this is the fact that a lot of classrooms have furniture that has been moved out of them and it's somewhere missing.
Yeah.
And we're continually trying to figure out how to get the tables back. Cells are 2016 is the current problem, by the way, as well as chairs because people move them into other classrooms.
Okay, so I think we've hit the end of the speakers list. Let's move to the second to last business item. If you look to the memo that was set at each seat, this is something that I drafted, and in this case, I was drafting it as your faculty representative on the board of advisors of Weill Hall and the Green Music Center. And because I want to participate rather than preside over the conversation, I'm going to be handing the gavel over to Vice Chair Works and have her and the Secretary handle the speakers list. And so So now you don't ask the chair to recognize you, you ask the vice chair. But to start the item, I don't know how many of you had a chance to read this. You probably weren't because you were paying attention to business here. But basically, I'm finding myself frequently caught in a position where I'm trying to represent the faculty over there, and we don't have a coherent, proactive statement of what we want the GMC to be and how it should be integrated and what principles, priorities should play in how that how it will be used and integrated. This has come up time and again, mostly our react. What we have seen from the Senate have been some resolutions where we're expressing concern about something being done that we don't want to have done. But I looked through past resolutions and I checked with our Senate analyst, and I didn't see anywhere where we ever said, if we have the GMC, this is what we want, and this is what we think should be priorities and principles when we're dealing with it, and these, and we are willing to have, or you know, maybe certain kinds of resources allocated there. And so we're always reacting to somebody else's initiatives instead of putting one out there. And so I think we need to be thinking in that coherent, positive term. What triggered this was the 800,000 figure that we heard bandied about at commencement, because that was brought forward at the June Green Music Center Board of Advisors. And it was a proposal that they asked the university for $800,000 over as much as 5 years. And it was meant to cover the shortfalls because they weren't bringing in enough external money to meet the budget that they had. And they're also looking ahead to when MasterCard sponsorship money stops coming in. Needless to say, this prompted a response from Brandon Mercer and myself. We were notified 30 minutes before that board meeting. The executive committee board meeting of July was open to all the board members, which is not usually the case because they were dealing with this. And since I wasn't able to be there because I was sitting on a narrowboat in the South Midlands canals, I did manage to get a memo to them all expressing the concern and how this was a shift from past the past expectations. And even if we had been having some resources going into it, this outright ask to be putting in was a shift. And we saw CFO Schlereth respond to this, I think from input from the students, input from me, and from what I was able to relay from the executive committee and a few of the others who caught wind of it, he did, also at the president's request, try and figure out a way to close that shortfall, and his memo indicates that he has done so. However, some may not feel comfortable enough with the transparency or the level of detail that we've been given. Some may worry about, given that for nearly 20 years, the line was always floating around, it's been done with external funding. I think that we really do finally need a position statement, whether as a resolution or some kind of study paper that's done there, because, as you'll see in the italics in the memo, most of the board members over at the GMC operate on anecdotal information about what they think we need, want, believe. And we haven't given them something formal and coherent. And I think that's why we're always reacting. And so I would like us to work on that. And I would like to start by maybe even having a little bit of a committee of the whole discussion here so that we aren't arguing about language or whatever, just say, what should we do? Because in the week since I came to XCOM with a resolution trying to figure it out what we would be doing, and even in that week was when all the numbers had changed, and so I couldn't draft a sensible resolution. I needed your consultation. So that's what I'm wanting to do now. So I'd like to have us talk about this, and then I would like to maybe solicit for a few people, maybe we could think about whether we relegate it to the Senate Budget Subcommittee working with a few people, but have us come up with something since we're not now having to respond immediately before October 1st with a position on that money. Let's do something more far-reaching. So with that, I open the floor.
Thank you.
Oh yeah, so we actually formally, we need a motion to go to a committee of the whole, and we'll need a second, and then if anybody has a concern about that. So is there a motion? So you take it.
I move. Okay. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Okay. No objection? So moved. We're now in the committee of the whole, so we can open it up to general discussion. And we'll start with the speaker's list.
Okay. I'll start off just by asking a question that it might sound silly, but in some ways it's very much coming from my own confusion with the GMC and Wild Hall and everything. Is what is this level of association with the university? In some ways I think of it as a direct part of the university, in some ways it's not. And this has come from a few different things. One, I was on a tour recently of the GMC with a visitor, and the employee that was giving us the tour was talking about the GMC, and they spoke about it as if it wasn't a part of the university, and they actually said it was an external auxiliary of the university. And I said, no, it's a part of the university. And then they said a couple other things that weren't true and didn't make sense. And I can't, and I'm not saying it's, you know, you can't hold every employee accountable, but I feel like it's a little bit of a cultural thing happening. I've also noticed repeatedly that in marketing for the MasterCard series and the GMC, Sonoma State, I'm pretty sure it's almost never mentioned. In multiple billboards I've seen when I'm driving on 101, the big fancy one that changes, the electric one. I remember the first one I saw right after the GMC opened was brown, and it didn't say Sonoma State anywhere on it. And a concert I was at recently, all the artists were saying Sonoma and Sonoma County, but never Sonoma State University. So I feel like in some ways, the culture of, there seems to be a weird cultural thing going on, which leads to a lot of confusion about what is the GMC in relation to the university. And then I know something that was said a lot was, oh, student fees are not used to build parts of it. I'm still confused about that. So I think that in some ways, I don't know, it's just a lot of confusion about that. It's hard for me to think about how we can put forward anything when I don't even know what our place is in terms of the GMC.
Do you want to respond to
that? I think getting the speakers out makes a lot of sense right now.
I was just going to add, I agree that there's a lot of confusion out there, and within our own university, what exactly the sometimes shifting relationship it seems is, you know, our relationship on the cultural side versus the relationship on the financial side, and they seem to vary in terms of how tightly together we are. One thing I just wanted to add that I found sort of oddly alarming was not so much even that there was a proposal put forward that the university fill in the budget gap for the GMC, that was the first thing that came to mind. You know, there were no looking for, you know, other ways to plug the hole. I mean, there were, but we could hear about them, but that was the first public description of how to fill the hole, and then how quickly it was able to be filled once they started looking for other resources. And that to me is what was sort of alarming. Wait a minute, if you could make an $800,000 shortfall that quickly, why were you asking the university in the first place?
So other concerns and questions that people have?
If there isn't somebody already on the speakers list, responding to that, Andrew said that he did have some information from Larry, CFO, and maybe you want to elaborate on the specifics of that memo, because I don't know if everybody actually read it and understood, because some of the numbers, of my understanding, are not through finding funds, but actually cutting some things,
right,
too.
But still,
it's an interesting combination, so maybe we have more of that. Yeah.
From that organization before it comes to the academic side.
So do you have any?
I can say the report was mentioned at the President's Budget Advisory Committee on this subject. I think everyone here should hear that these numbers are preliminary, but it is a first attempt to find that missing dollar amount, which is no longer there now that we've actually identified some funds that could be used that will not impact the university. Vice President Schlerer pointed out that the GMC is a complex, and within that complex there are a lot of teaching spaces. And because of that, we get recognition from the Chancellor's Office for those teaching spaces to the tune of $270,000. So that's the first piece of finding the money. The second piece is that every ticket that gets sold has a $2.50 parking and facilities production fee in it. The rationale being that it mimics the parking fee of $5 if there are two people in the car. And so there's an opportunity there to increase that slightly on the ticket price. And in that way, you get a slightly bigger facility fee. It wouldn't be very much money, but when you add up the number of patrons that are coming and using the parking facility, that's a large amount of money that Larry suggested was about $200,000 a year. There have been two new development officers hired for the Green Music Center, so it's now a fully functioning development unit, three, and they have been tasked to find $400,000 every year in addition to their salaries. So that's another $400,000. And then there have been some savings in salary over the Green Music Center. For instance, the marketing department has been reduced, all of it totaling about $400,000. That totals about $100,000 because there were two positions that were lost and I believe are not going to be filled, maybe one of them. So it's about $100,000. And finally, there's definitely some savings to be made in how generous we are to the artists coming to the Green Music Center. Without naming any names, some of the artists have got some fairly elaborate demands in terms of 20 stagehands for the performance. We can certainly cut back on that and just not satisfy those demands. So there's a general feeling that $400,000 can easily be shaved off the cost of the artists on an annual basis. So just adding up those vague numbers gives you about 1.3 million. So it easily covers the $800,000 shortfall. And Neil can add to that.
Just to clarify one number, the money for the, Andrew mentioned the classroom space, that's money that comes from the Chancellor's Office for facilities maintenance. So it's not just money that comes from classrooms, it's actually for maintenance where we hire custodians and those kinds of things. So I believe that was tied to Schroeder Hall.
Sure.
If I'm not mistaken, which we didn't expect to get, but the Chancellor's Office was able to get that for us.
One thing I'm trying to jumpstart here, gets back to the initial motivation. I think we need some kind of document that says, from our perspective, in light of the strategic plan discussions and whatnot that we had last year, what would an integrated GMC hall look like? How would we have it be part of our pedagogy? Some parts of the university have more vision of it than others. For instance, this past year we hired a faculty member to get an orchestra going. And so having students playing in an orchestra in that center seems consistent with at least the music department's vision. How about the rest of us? What are we wanting? Even the board members themselves over there are saying, this is a university facility. That's part of the brand. That's what's distinguishing it from some of the other places, whether it's Wells Fargo or some of the other, places. That's part of what they're trying to do. So how do we do it? What would it look like if we were to take that hall and really make it part of GMC? And then, given that, then what's the appropriate place for money to be coming from or not?
So we have Senator Wong on the...
Yeah, I think what you're saying sounds wonderful, but it seems like this requires a process. Mm-hmm. First of all, to answer the question about what is the formal relationship between the university and the GMC, and considering that the GMC is a unit with many parts, does that relationship change when you're looking at the different parts of the GMC and the different parts of the university? I'm not sure that's something that can be answered quickly. So I would wonder if there might be a committee that would start to look at this and get all the pieces together, and is that appropriate?
changed my mind was the Senate Budget Subcommittee, at least in terms of what kinds of money do we have and how are we using them? We have the Gallup Preserves. How do funds work in that kind of a place? We have some of these other kinds of facilities. And I also know that Kirsten Neely, when she got started in this last year, this is actually an area of her specialty in terms of handling finances for government organizations. And so I reached out to her and asked her if she were asked, would she be willing, you know, would she consider doing something? She said, well, maybe not all the budget subcommittee stuff, but maybe she can help us chase that. So that is a resource, and so maybe that's part of it. But I also wonder if, like, EPC and FSAC, I mean, are there things that are going to be coming from the other areas, how we see doing it? Because if we've got music and performing arts curriculum in there, it seems like maybe there should be something about, you know, what's going to be the tail, or what's going to be the dog, and, you know, is the tail wagging the dog, or which way are we doing things here? So maybe we can get in there. Any other?
Just a comment on that, because I heard the same question when I was attending the cocktail hour at Sandy Wild's house last year, when there were a number of the board members from the GMC there, and they were half encouraged to have some one-on-one conversations. And, you know, I come from a field-based department, from environmental studies, and so, you know, we don't use large performance spaces routinely in our work, and, you know, perfectly willing to try and be creative about that, but I was interested in, you know, seeing, well, are there ideas on the other side? And every person that I spoke to on that, they were like, lots for you to figure out. And I feel like I'm being asked to reinvent my way of teaching or my way of understanding my own curriculum to try and accommodate a large building or an organization, or I'm making that distinction. The GMC is not just a building, it's not just a performance space, it's this large, complex organization, but I don't know how to use that in my teaching. I'm already pretty busy doing the teaching the way I'm doing it. And so I feel like there's almost an expectation that all areas of the curriculum will be able to integrate with this organization in the same way that music is. And it's simply not apparent to me that we all are going to be able to make equal use of that. And continuing to ask the question I'm not sure it gets us very far in that sense.
Is there interest for some people to help work with me to try and maybe even working with the Senate Budget Subcommittee but start wrestling with this and seeing if we could come back with this? Part of what I'm wanting is a diversity of perspectives on it. I come out of the social sciences, and I had a very different position than I imagine some of the arts and humanities folks might, or the science and tech folks. So. Is there anybody here who might want to volunteer for that? It's just a project we've been discussing in other areas.
Well, I mean, I think it would be, I agree with Senator Watt that not necessarily every department is going to have a way to integrate, but I do think it's worthwhile. For the standing committees that have a place looking at curriculum and looking at co-curricular type things to think about where it does fit. You know, how could potentially, you know, we build a first class music department here, or in what areas is there a place for better integration? I don't think that every department needs to be integrated, but it's worthwhile to kind of take a month or two for these groups to kind of think about what would a revolution look like. And bring it back to this body. Senator Brandon?
Yes, so I don't believe I can make a motion while we're in the committee of the whole, but I come out of the committee of the whole, and I'm not sure how we can do that. I plan to move that we that the chair send out a call for an ad hoc committee, and it doesn't have to consist of Senate members, it should be open to the entire faculty. And such a call might bring in some interested people who can then draft this document you're talking about. But I think it's something, I don't think it's something we can write today.
Senator Glasgow?
I was actually going to just echo what
what Sam just said. I've called them, and there are several faculty in Arts and Humanities who would be interested in having input on a committee like that, but that aren't here today. And some, maybe a broader call for participation would be helpful.
Okay.
Okay.
And
Charles, I don't have a
right. Okay. So Jolly, and then
yeah.
Sorry, I'm telling this first,
I am new to this conversation, so this may have already been done, but I keep hearing people say what Senator Watt said, which is, I don't feel like I know how to do this, and so it seems to me that maybe an appropriate activity for that our community might be is if we can scare up some models from other universities that have had these performing arts centers that maybe we could be looking at how to look at the community.
Yeah, that sounds great, and that's related to a comment that I wanted to make regarding the format of the desired outcome. Resolution is not necessarily the right thing to do, but something along the lines of an MOU, a memorandum of understanding that is more binding on both sides, like a true agreement.
So then you can say, do we have anybody here who accepts to come out of the committee of the whole?
Yeah, so that is, without any other comments, we're going to come out of the committee of the whole and go back to our regular Senate business. Okay. Yeah.
I guess I can take it out of that.
Okay.
All right, so I recognize Senator Brad.
I move that the chair send out a broad call for an ad hoc committee to address.
Yes, sir.
All those in favor, is there any discussion on that motion? All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Okay, so then I will take that, and I will see if I can even report back to XCOM by next week, but also put out the call. Thank you very much. Okay, so our last order of business is another traditional item. We take our group photograph. So, Laura will herd us cats, and we will all try to get together and get a...
I think I'd like to sit on this table and stand behind them. I'm going to try that.
So typically what we have is the officers in the front and then everybody behind them.